Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are introducing a, I guess, relatively new company on the show. However, this company is quite well known, I think, through the project that they hold and to a lot of, I think, the longer time listeners on our show. Company is called Bunker Hill Mining, traded on the CSE under the symbol BNKR and on the OTC markets under the symbol BHLL. Chad and I are chatting with David Weens, the CFO over at Bunker Hill Mining. Now, again, the company holds the Bunker Hill Mine. This is in Idaho. Where we're going to start here, instead of starting with this project, I want to start with really the new team that came in to bring this company back into the public eye and start to hopefully grow and expand the profile here. The new team came in back in last year, 2020. And David, let's start off there. The new team that came in, take us through how that whole transition happened from old management to new management and the new life that management, the new management has breathed into this company.
Thanks, Corey. Absolutely. And first of all, thanks for having me back on the show. It's been a couple of years. Last time we spoke, I think, was when I was at SSR Mining, which I'll touch on in a second. So the new team is really what sets this apart from our predecessing for the predecessor company. So the new team came in about March, April of last year. It's a team that was former executives from Barrick. So led by our executive chairman, Richard Williams, who was Barrick's chief operating officer from 2014 to 2018. So John Thornton brought him to effectively be a turnaround guy at Barrick. He did an excellent job of that over the 5 years that he was chief operating officer there. He brought with him a former executive, Sam Ash, who's my boss, the CEO, former general manager at Barrick's large-scale Lumwana mine in Zambia. And lastly, but not least, Brad Barnett, our VP of sustainability, who was Barrick's head of closure and rehabilitation. Key piece of the puzzle, given some of the legacy challenges, which we can talk about at Bunker Hill and all the success that we've had turning that around. And then as for myself, I joined about 6 months ago as CFO. So I was sort of the last piece of the executive team as the CFO. And certainly when this opportunity came across my desk, once I understood the individuals involved, as well as the asset itself, and the opportunity to really build something pretty special here, I jumped at it. So we've accomplished a lot over the last year. We've published two 43-101 resources. We've done multiple successful exploration campaigns. We published a PEA, which I'd love to get into with you guys. And we are now full speed ahead in terms of financing and moving the project forward.
So it really is a turnaround story here for Bunker Hill Mining. And even before the project, you guys also had to clean up that OTC listing as well, because it was under the term of caveat emptor, which meant that it was really hard, almost impossible for U.S. people to trade on the OTC markets. You guys have cleaned that up as well. Take us through this process to now open up the U.S. listing as well, please.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a huge for us. And we put out a press release last Monday. So you're absolutely right. For effectively the last 9 years, investors in the U.S. have not been able to buy our stock because of this caveat emptor. And so, you know, invite listeners to certainly check out the press release for the details. But to summarize, effectively, there was a former shareholder 9 years ago that was investigated by the SEC, there was a different board, different management, different shareholder base at the time. So these issues are certainly many years behind us, but this caveat emptor designation sort of hung with the company for the last few years, and nobody really sort of bothered to deal with it. So certainly that's been pretty high up on our list and on my list over the last few months. So we went through a very extensive review process and diligence process with FINRA, with OTC Markets, with the market maker that we brought on. And end result, which is what we expected, it just takes time to sort of go through the motions, was a clean bill of health from the regulators and the removal of the symbol, of the status. So for the first time in 9 years, investors on a wide variety of brokerage platforms can go and trade us. And so that's been a huge overhang for us in terms of the liquidity in the stock. And, with the removal, we're already seeing an uptick in the volume, and we've concurrently put in our application for an OTC QB upgrade, which will certainly help the volume even more. So that's a huge catalyst for us.
Okay, David. Well, I'm glad that you got a new team and things are moving the right direction as far as getting all the pieces in place for launch. But let's get investors up to speed. Some will be familiar with the Bunker Hill project, but let's talk a little bit about the historic nature of the mine, because it's a prolific zinc, lead, and silver mine. And maybe just bring our listeners up to speed on why you thought the project was attractive and the overall goods on the Bunker Hill mine.
No, it sounds good, Chad. So, as you put it rightly, it's a prolific mine. So, first of all, it's located in the most prolific silver producing district of the U.S. And I believe second in the world, with about 1.2 billion ounces of silver produced historically. Listeners may be aware of, you know, Hecla's Lucky Friday mine, America's Gold and Silver's Galena, and others in the district. And so we are the third largest silver producer within that silver producing district, with 165 million ounces produced over about 95 years. So the mine produced from about 1885 to 1981. It then shut down, not for economic reasons, but for environmental ones. There was an on-site smelter. There was a zinc plant. Frankly, it was an environmental disaster. So the EPA stepped in, took over the site, cleaned it up over effectively the next 35 years, put in nobody knows how much, but it's at least $100 million. They flattened the smelter, remediated the site. That's now all behind us. And then it's been in care and maintenance effectively since 2016. And there was a couple of management teams that sort of stepped in, didn't really do much actual work. We're more sort of on the promotional end, hoping to sort of flip it on to somebody else. And that's really, you know, apart from sort of the credibility in terms of the resumes that we just went through, is the difference between us and them. We've done a lot of work over the last year to actually move this forward. So in terms of why we were attracted to the asset, I mean, you know, talk about a prolific asset, 165 million ounces of silver produced, and we're the shallowest mine in the Silver Valley. So we're the biggest producer of tonnage while remaining the shallowest. So we're only down to 4,000 feet. If you compare that to Lucky Friday, for instance, which is down at 10,000, we've got a lot more room to go. And anecdotally, down at the 4,000 foot level, the silver grades increase at depth, which is actually similar to the zonation that you see at other Silver Valley mines. So, you know, it's not on the books at the moment just because we haven't got down there and drilled, but it's not unreasonable to think that if we got 165 million ounces down to 4,000 feet, that there's at least as much over the next 4,000 feet. So that's certainly something that we're going to be investigating over time, but it makes it a super exciting asset in terms of the long-term potential. And in terms of the short-term potential, we've got a pathway to getting this thing back in production within 2 years. And so that's what we're sort of going, you know, all guns blazing on the financing.
Okay. And you've also recently announced a PEA, which you alluded to earlier, on the project. And I believe that it's got a 46% IRR, a 2.5-year payback period, 101 million net present value, 42 million capex. So maybe walk us through some of the specifics on the PEA and if there's any sensitivities to some of the changes in the metal prices, as we've seen the commodities have done well lately, zinc, lead, and silver. So maybe walk us through a high-level overview of the PEA you put out and how we should look at the project.
You're absolutely right. Over $100 million NPV, 46% IRR. And I think what's worth noting is the metal prices that were used in that PEA. So $1.15 zinc, that compares to the spot levels about $1.35, 90 cent lead, which compares to about a dollar. And the silver price, you know, the most importantly here, $20 silver relative to, obviously, as listeners would know, $27.28. So if you plug in the spot prices of those metals and you rerun the PEA model, we've got a good slide in our presentation, which I'd invite listeners to go to our website to see. The NPV doubles to $200 million with an 89% IRR. So again, that's just off of the 10-year mine life in the PEA, without considering that this asset, it produced for 100 years. And for the majority of those 100 years, it only had 5 to 10 years of mine life. So here we are sitting with 10 years in front of us, an easy pathway to production, shallowest mine in the Silver Valley. And we see this as being a multi-decade asset for us. So that $200 million at spot level, again, does not reflect the substantial silver upside at the bottom of the mine. And we also have targets in the upper level, but it also doesn't include any mine life extension. So In terms of the other aspects, $42 million CapEx, very modest capital bill to get this thing up and running. The majority of that is related to the processing plant, which we're looking to locate underground, which is important because it means we won't have any surface tailings. And that also leads into our permitting situation, because unlike a lot of jurisdictions, we do not effectively need an operating permit to get up and running. And the reason for that is because we're on 100% private ground with 100% patented mining claims. And in the state of Idaho, which, by the way, just got voted by the Fraser Institute as the number one mining jurisdiction in the world from a policy perception perspective, you do not need an operating permit to restart a mine that has less than 50% of the surface disturbance of previous, which obviously is the case if we're doing underground tailing. So attractive returns to investors, bottom part of the cost curve, quick payback, and does not include any of the mine life extension or the high-grade silver upside.
So, David, where's the growth and near-term catalyst going to come from? Is it the company moving more towards construction, development, and then into production, or is it going to be through drilling, through expanding and de-risking the asset?
Yeah, and I'll sort of dodge the question a little bit by saying both. And the reason why is we have a very clear path to getting this thing into production within 2 years. And that's outlined in the PEA. And we're going through the financing process right now to get the funds in order to affect that. But you know, exploration is absolutely key to the growth here as well. And we've got a great slide in our presentation, which shows the cash flow profile of the 10 years. And so over the 10 years, there's about $20 million of free cash flow per year. Again, compare that to the $42 million to put up front. So you put in 42 and you get 20 a year. So, you know, pretty attractive. But the interesting part is that in the last few years, that $20 million a year goes up to more like 30 to 40 a year. And the reason for that is because the silver grade goes up as you go to a little bit lower depth. And so coming back to your question about the growth, certainly the challenge for us as we invest in exploration is to try to bring some of that increase in silver grades a little bit earlier in the mine plan so that we can generate more than the $20 million a year. Again, the $20 million a year is at PEA prices, not spot prices. It would be a lot higher if you used spot prices. But to try to increase that by bringing more silver earlier on in the mine plan. So that's what we're focused on.
So what's that work going to look like then? What? How many meters of drilling? Do you have any more details on what the program's going to look like to move that silver earlier on in the mine plan?
Yeah. So we are doing drilling this year. About 10 to 15,000 feet is the budget for this year. And so, as you know, exploration is an iterative process. You've got to analyze your results and then recalibrate your targets. But concurrent with the drilling, we've just launched a ground geophysics program. And we just put out a press release on that last week as well. And so we're pretty excited about that because, you know, it's a 5,800 acre package, which is pretty massive. I invite listeners to sort of look at the footprint of this mine relative to the other Silver Valley mines. And the existing workings of the 100-year production history is only about 900 acres. And so what we've launched here is a 1,500 acre ground geophysics program, which will go down to about 1,300 feet. And it's really contiguous to where the existing mine workings were. So what we're looking for is parallel structures that are relatively near surface that we could potentially complement the 10-year mine plan with as we get into it over the next few years. So obviously, you know, the point of the geophysics program is to, outline places to have drill targets. Then you have to actually do the drilling. And, you know, it is a multi-month, multi-year process. But really, as we look to the medium and long term, that's what we're looking to kind of bring into the plan. And then, you know, the digitization, you know, we talked to think a little bit about that in terms of we have 95 years worth of production records here and drilling records. And so a lot of those records were on paper. Now, very well done for the standard of the time, but not digitized. And so the team has done a ton of work on digitizing those records that helped to bring the resource to 43-101 standards. But we're not done yet. And we've still actually got a lot of digitization to do at the lower levels of the mine, which is, as we talked about earlier, where that silver mineralization is predominant.
Okay. Let's also take care of some of the other company fundamentals here. Share structure, about 164 million shares outstanding. There is quite a large warrant overhang, too, 119 million warrants. David, take us through the average strike price of these and any other info you can give us in terms of the warrants here.
So, yeah, we do have 120 million warrants. About half of them do come due in a couple of years. And so we really see that as sort of an embedded financing that'll come in about 29 million Canadian dollars, which will come in mid-2023, which is right around when we plan to be, a few months into commercial production. So that's about half of the warrants. Those are at 50 cents Canadian. Our current share price is 30 cents. And the remainder are a little bit longer dated to sort of the end of 2025, beginning of 2026. And those are also at higher prices. So certainly, you know, there are a lot of warrants out there, but we see those reducing over time. And the strike price on those warrants is significantly above where the share price is now. So a lot of room to run upwards.
What about cash? Cash in the bank for the company. How much does the company have? And what's the general budget going to be, let's say, through the rest of this year?
Yeah. So we reported $5.5 million of cash as of March 31st. And we see that cash sort of certainly lasting us through this sort of financing process that we're running through the summer here. And then we'll sort of reevaluate in the fall in terms of financing needs. But it got us through the PEA. It has got us through significant drilling through the geophysics program. We will reevaluate towards the end of the summer and the beginning of the fall in terms of, what capital is needed to take us through the next 6 to 12 months and beyond.
Okay, David. Well, looking forward over the next 3 to 6 months and beyond, as you say, what should investors be most focused on? What news is coming down the pike, so to speak? And what are the key milestones we should be looking at through the balance of the year?
Yeah, Chad. So we've got a lot of catalysts coming up over the near term here. So we talked about the OTCQB migration. So that's in process. Hope to have that approved, in a number of weeks. We are targeting research coverage. In fact, on the day that we announced the lifting of the trading restrictions in the caveat emptor, we got our first research coverage initiated by Sprott. So that was fantastic to get our first research coverage. We're talking with other brokers as well. The three big catalysts on top of that that investors can look forward to on the corporate side over the next few months is resolution of the liability that we have to the EPA. So the only liability that we do have, significant liability, is this $19 million liability to the EPA. We're in discussions with them right now. Discussions are going well on restructuring and or deferring that liability. So that will allow us to purchase the mine. We, as a reminder to the listeners, we have an option to purchase. It's just another $3 million in cash and $2 million in shares. That'll follow immediately after resolution with the EPA. And concurrently, some news on financing update. So we're talking with lots of parties. There's been great interest in helping us restart the mine. And so you could see EPA and potentially restart financing all announced within the next 2 to 3 months if things go nicely as they have been going. And an upgrade to the TSXV. So we're working on that, upgrading from the CSE to the TSXV, which, just like the OTCQB, will allow us to increase our trading liquidity, which will help investors. Look for news on the geophysics program that we talked about. So towards the end of the summer, we should have some results to disclose on that. And apart from that, it's moving the project forward. It's de-risking it through mine plan optimization, engineering. We're looking at toll milling opportunities for pre-production revenue and just moving the project forward. So lots on the horizon.
Okay. David, I appreciate the update here, and really a new company in a sense because of the new management team that came in. Renewed strategy here at the Bunker Hill Mine. If anybody has any follow-up questions, please email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. We will get David to address those, and we will also follow up as more news hits the market. David, thanks again for your time. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks very much, Corey and Chad.